Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the Naked Gaming Podcast with Chris Barrow and Lee Milner. Chris has been speaking to the founder of the esports team, G2, about all things gaming, including what it's like running a team at the moment during the coronavirus pandemic. This is Carlos Rodriguez, also known as Ocelot.
What's been different, I suppose, this year compared to the last few years? Because so much must have changed for you.
Well, the beauty of this is that we you know, it all started digital, right? In video games and video game competition, it all started digital. So, you know, most of us are used to this, and most of us, grew playing, competing in tournaments online. So it really falls into place quite nicely, actually. It feels very natural.
Yeah, because being at home and broadcasting from home, like you are now, I suppose is very much part of the esports scene. You almost don't really have to move.
That's right. It's been like that for the majority of the last 15 years. So again, it's just, you know, back to the roots, and you realize that these days, by doing this these days, people actually don't mind as much that, there is not that much physical interaction. When it comes down to overall engagement on content and stuff like that, people, you know, engage just as much, if not more, with digital native content than, you know, content based on real life interactions and footage. So yeah, it's definitely partly a surprise and partly natural for us.
Yeah. And tell us, G2 itself, it's one of the huge players, one of the biggest esports teams that there is. I mean, I've been watching esports for a long time, and I've already been aware of G2's impact. What are some of the games that you find the biggest and the best for you to be involved in? Because there's so many different and new games coming out all the time. You've got to keep on top of that, you know.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's part of our job to, number one, understanding, you know, where this whole thing is going, you know, what people like. It's a part of our job to understand what people like to watch in terms of movies, what people is craving for. And we sort of digest all that information, and we sort of automatically understand which game is going to be relevant tomorrow, right? So sure. People are looking more towards, you know, maybe battle royales or something, because they want to feel that sense of accomplishment of being the number one out of 100 people, for example. Well, I think we already went through that. And I feel like things are slowly shifting again, right? So knowing, it's almost like understanding, human nature and what people are liking, and connecting that to video games. It's honestly not that different from what, you know, a director might think of when thinking about a movie or anything of that nature.
Well, I've been watching Hearthstone loads since it came out. I think it's 4 or 5 years now. And I've been, you know, addicted to watching streams of that and some of your players who compete on that. But I've noticed that something like Fall Guys, which is quite a new game in the last couple of months, that's got that kind of battle royale feel, but it's a bit different. It's not like Fortnite. You know, you've got people running the gauntlet, trying to get to the front of the race and stuff. I guess when a game like that comes out, do you try and jump on the popularity of that, get a team out as soon as you can, or do you just have to stick with the ones that you've been doing for a while as well?
Yeah, so typically when you enter a game, at least for us, it works this way. When you enter a game, you enter either because the game is already relevant and you have to be a part of that game, which typically means that you were too late, right?
Sure,
because you will have to enter when everybody wants to enter, you will have to overpay. Or you enter a game that you think has the potential to become large one day, tomorrow, and then you enter at a smaller price, a lower price than when the game, if the game becomes relevant, everybody else will enter at. And then you have the first mover sort of advantage, right? So our portfolio of titles is, you know, has those two sort of categories combined.
What's your number one game in terms of
League of Legends? It's League not even close. Like League of Legends is the largest video game on the planet, period. Nothing gets close. Not FIFA, not Call of Duty, nothing gets close.
And why do you think that is? Is it because it's been around? Because it's been around for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's part of the reason, right? It's been around for 10 plus years. And if I log into the game right now, I still see people that 10 years ago played 10 hours a day, still playing 10 hours a day today. So wow. It has the learning curve that allows for new players to want to come by, players to want to play the game. And it has that depth to ensure that hardcore players stick around for many years. And that's the formula every publisher is trying to hit, right? And that I think only a few have been able to hit.
Can you just tell me a bit about League of Legends? Because I noticed that the BBC over here actually broadcast some of the League of Legends finals recently. I think it was about a month ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was specifically because they knew that people would be at home and there wasn't really any live sport on the telly at that time. But how can you explain the appeal of League of Legends to someone who is used to watching football? Like, it's quite, do you think it's hard to get into, or is it actually, once you've learned the kind of the rules and the basics, it's actually easy enough to become like a fan?
You know, if I watch a lacrosse game, I mean, I understand the basics of lacrosse right now, but
sure.
Before I understood the basics of lacrosse, if I would watch a lacrosse game, I wouldn't fully understand what was going on.
Yeah.
I would get answers of, okay, I understand this here and there, but I wouldn't fully grasp what was happening at each moment. And with baseball, it would be a similar situation. I think there's no different here, right? There are games that are self-explanatory. The moment you watch them, you know what's going on, like Rocket League. It's literally soccer with flying cars. however, there's games like League of Legends that have, you know, depth in terms of the champions that are picked, the abilities they have, the items that they, you know, build. But the beauty of League of Legends is that it's like an onion, right? It has a lot of layers of knowledge. So the top layer is when you understand, you know, gold advantage. This team has more gold. This team has more kills. Then there's the next layer of the onion, which is this team killed more towers. This team has a dragon, which gives them some buffs and make them more powerful. And then the next layer, okay, this team has this type of champion that is very aggressive, and the other team has this other champion that is very tanky and is very, very beefy and never dies, right? And so slowly, the more you watch, the more you get into those deeper layers and the more hooked you get towards the game. But the beauty of League of Legends is that every layer is entertaining.
Yes.
So the first time you watch it, you will probably just not understand too much. The second time you watch it, you will get the basics. You will know more or less who's winning at that moment. And that goes on and on and on, right? I've probably watched thousands of games in my life. And every time I watch, I see something new and I learn something new. So that's why I think it has that appeal, that wide appeal to casuals and to hardcore players.
And the players themselves as well. And I'm talking about players who are part of the team. It's such an interesting kind of new area because I view them as the same as you might view like a professional boxer, for example. They have a certain skill set. You can put them in head-to-heads against other individuals or big teams as well. I mean, the prize money is absolutely huge nowadays. You're talking millions and millions of dollars for some of the biggest tournaments that there is. I guess people, again, who aren't quite into esports, they might look at it and go, whoa, this is a huge industry. Like that must be a great thing to be able to tap into for you because there's all this money on offer kind of thing.
Yeah, it's honestly more than the money, which of course is very nice. It's the fact that I've been here in the industry for now almost 16 years and it all started in like 1997, so when I was 7 years old. So, and ever since 1997, if you look at the overall numbers, the audience itself, it has grown organically every single year, regardless of what was going on around the world. Every single year, player base went up, viewer base went up, no matter what, right? So what's very appealing is that is the opportunity to be a part of a lot of people's young lives. And then as they grow older and as they have their children and stuff like that, they're still your fans. They still know you. They still follow and support you. So it's that generational phenomenon that I'm starting to now realize. A lot of the people that were my fans when I was a player nowadays have children like I do. And it just goes to show, it's just not something, when you play games or watch people play games, it's something, it's sort of like it becomes your lifestyle. So it doesn't matter you're 30, 40 years old. If you grew up like that, chances are you will still do those things. And that is very interesting from a business perspective and, of course, from a human perspective.
Well, can I, because the players themselves, I don't want to go into contracts and everything, but the players themselves, they essentially will take a, you know, percentage win of the money, but I guess the team gets some as well. There'll also be commercial opportunities. Like if you, people watch a lot of game streams, they'll be sponsored by, I don't know, Red Bull, for example, mm-hmm. sponsors a lot of gamers. The chair that you're sitting on now, you know, I'm getting yep. stuff like that. There's all these kind of commercial opportunities, I guess.
We have the Pringles around here.
exactly. But there is a lot of stuff about like energy drinks and equipment and stuff like that as well. Is that quite a big part of the business, actually having branded stuff around you?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, prize money only accounts for, even in a, with a super successful team like ours, like you can argue that we are the number one esports team in terms of competition in the world right now, mm-hmm. and competitive success. And our prize money revenue is accounts for less than 10% of the overall revenue.
Oh, really?
Like way less. Yeah, way less. It's probably like 6% of the overall revenue.
Really?
So that goes to show how much business there is behind, you know, this venture. And it's just, there's below-the-line sponsorship deals, there's media rights, there is, you know, the broadcasting rights, there is, you know, live stream deal rights and things of that nature. There is, you know, all the content output. You know, you think about how many content platforms are right now battling and paying for content. And we are amongst the most sought after content generation machine you can think of right now. On top of that, you have merchandising sales, both physical and digital. We also sell our logo merch, so to say, and our sort of in-game skins in the game, and we get a portion of that. So it's like there's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of revenue verticals that just make the business, from a business perspective, just let alone just being a part of the future, let alone all of those things from a business, purely business perspective, a sustainable, profitable, powerful business that carries on growing.
And the players, because I watch a lot of Formula One as well, and they almost like sign their players for a contracted period of time. And then there's like, not like in football as well, there's a transfer window and people can go from different teams. And obviously over the last 16, 17 years, whatever, you can't just always keep the same players. Players have a huge draw from their fans and you want that hooked into the team as well. Is that quite a straightforward process or is it quite complicated with contracts and stuff?
So there are, I think most of the talent-related challenges that football goes through, or a lot of them, esports does not go through.
Really?
And I'll explain you why. Of course, there's still, you know, the transfer windows. There's still, you know, you name it. But Zlatan Ibrahimovic has been playing at the highest level for longer than I can remember. Cristiano Ronaldo has been playing at the highest level for like, what, 14 years?
Yeah, exactly.
15 years. An esports competitor will play at the highest level for 3, 4, 5 tops if he is a top player. There's a lot of variance as well. On top of that, games might come and go.
Yeah.
If the game happens to be relevant and if the guy happens to remain relevant in those years, it's still only 3, 4, 5 years of top gameplay, right? Which, yeah, it leads him to have a huge fan base following, but at the end of the day, he's nowhere comparable comparable with any of his traditional sport stars. So there's a lot of variance in which players are part of teams, which makes the teams a higher common denominator than in traditional sports. Yes, I realized very quickly that I was a fan of Cristiano Ronaldo and not a fan of Real Madrid, necessarily. You know, that would be very hard to see in esports because there's teams, players coming and going within the team much more often. There's, you know, a franchise player might be a franchise player just because he was with you for 3 years, and that's already considered a franchise player, which in football is like a standard contract duration for a mercenary, you know?
Yeah, of course, of course.
So yeah, it's just a lot of good things going for the teams and sort of helping us driving that organic fan base and support over the years.
And I guess once people become popular, even if they drop off being at the elite level, because they are popular at creating the content, you might still get people wanting to hook into that. So I guess you've still got that side of things. Like you say, people might come for videos from a particular gamer who might still be with you, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. After their careers are over, you know, how in traditional sports, they typically become coaches or they typically become part of the management.
Yeah.
But here they can become a content creator, and most of them do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's most of them want to be a part of their team they grew up with, maybe. And so that sort of creates that long tail in that relationship, which all of a sudden you turned a hardcore fan from the team into a fan from the team that also enjoys beyond the game to be entertained, right? Yeah. And then he starts to see, instead of only competitive, relevant content, he starts seeing entertaining content, content that's supposed to not necessarily be about competition, but be about comedy or something like that. And then you turn your fan base or you let them expect different things from you. So yeah, I think it's a great opportunity just in general for teams to develop that talent, potentially keep it, potentially not. But regardless, I think it all plays into the team's advantage.
I'm going to ask you about your plans for the future, but I just wanted to quickly, just one quick question to slip in, that we're in a time now where, yes, computers are always getting better and PC gaming is becoming faster and faster, and internet connections are finally starting to be good enough for me to get involved. But tell us about the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. We're in a period of time now where the next generation is upon us. Do you think that that's going to make a big difference to the scene, because you'll have people who aren't traditionally computer gamers having some seriously powerful technology at their fingertips? They might be able to stream, you know, broadcast PlayStation content, Xbox content from their own homes. So do you think that's going to change the esports scene, the fact that the next generation's coming?
Yeah, always for the better. Let me explain you why. So when the new PS5 comes out, the PS4 will be greatly reduced in price. All the microprocessors and graphic cards and whatever it is that the previous generation of consoles or of PCs were, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, really, really good, will be underpriced. And all of a sudden, more people will have access to better technology, right? For cheaper. So every time technology makes a leap forward, it's an opportunity for somebody that did not have the means to have this technology or access to this technology, all of a sudden they have access to this technology because it's cheap enough for them and available. And then you have games like League of Legends, who people don't play because of the graphics, but because of other reasons. So then all of a sudden you have one more potential customer as years go by. I think the most played, most relevant video game on the planet will never or not often be the most advanced when it comes down to the graphics, right? It will be the one that has the most potential to be played by everybody.
Yeah.
So cross-platform, from their phone, from all the consoles, from all the potential computers they have, you know, with a cheap computer, it'll work, a notebook. If you make a game that is available for everybody, and it's really fun to play, and it has depth, and it also caters to casuals, the game will kill it.
Yeah.
That's why I think what Riot Games is doing, I don't know if you've been following, but they've created a League of Legends version for the phone.
Yeah.
And that is going to kick ass. It's a pretty much simplified version of what already exists that can be played on most smartphones, and that's going to bang. Like, I mean, I don't know how to say it. It's going to be incredibly large, right?
Yeah, it's called Wild Rift, I think, is that
Wild
right?
Rift, yes.
That's it, yeah. So it's going to be, like you say, it's going to hit that sweet spot of everything then.
Yeah, absolutely. And the beauty of the position we are at as a team is that, look, tomorrow there might be a world where the biggest esport happens to be AR or VR or whatever console or, you know, or a computer or on phone, who knows, right? But we don't care. If the game is relevant and it has competition, we might just have a team in it and we will win on it, right? So we are very agnostic to where technology is headed. We just embrace everything.
Yeah, I suppose that's the best way to be because you're always there ready for it when it comes.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for talking to us. It's really great to have an insight into how, well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest esports team runs. So thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe. Get on Instagram.
On the Instas.
On the Insta.